time to say hi to Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa geezer. Good to see you.
Hello, Phil. Good to see you again.
What's been going on? What wrongs have you been writing?
I've been showing up for work every day. I suppose that's that counts, right?
Yeah, not bad when it's your own company.
Yeah, but I have a team of excellent people that support me as I go.
All right, then. If you want to check out some of the stuff we're talking about, it's on Steve's website, Hong Kong Visa Geezer with an A, .com. First things first, you often tell us about new stuff. Is there any new stuff that we need to know about?
Let me see. New per se, not really. We're starting to notice a trend on the part of the immigration department when it comes to people who are establishing businesses here.
Good. That's what I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, they are increasingly expecting to see more on the ground commitment to these businesses, which are just getting started and are looking for immigration approvals to be able to remain here to carry on those businesses.
Right.
So, yeah, there used to be a little bit more sort of buying of a prospective story. These days they seem to be looking for a little bit more sort of new facts on the ground, which is evidence of manifest commitment in relation to their intention to invest in Hong Kong. So since I saw you last, I've noticed that particularly, Phil.
All right. Two things I'm going to tie in here. On Friday, Chef Robin can't make it, he's very, very busy, but I'm going to have an interesting chat with a very colourful bloke, Jason Black. Now, Jason's a top chef. He runs Shaw. And he's also come out with a new book. Now, in our to-ing and fro-ing, he was sort of saying that, boy, I wish I could get the chefs I wanted, or I wish we in our industry could get the chefs we wanted. Now, Steve Vines was on about that with me the other day.
Okay.
Apropos nothing.
Yeah.
So what the deal seems to be is I'm running a restaurant and I know I want this chef because I think this guy's the business.
Yeah.
But I'm not allowed to.
Yeah. Well, actually, I know Jason Black very well, too. So, and we're in the process now of putting together a community of interest to develop a lobby.
Did I say that?
It makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you raised it. So we're developing a lobby to approach the powers that be in this town with a view to the possible adjustment of the way that policy is implemented in relation to F&B staffers. Because.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it seems that the vast majority of applications for employment visas for people who want to work in the F&B industry here don't fall within the rubric of current policy determined as being a professional for Hong Kong and the general employment policy. So a chef, for example, can get approval if they are a qualified chef and
not
one of the lesser ones.
A particular chef. You know, when did the immigration boys become qualified to say who's good to run a restaurant?
Well, you're right. And the issue here is that the data which the immigration department rely on to determine how the F&B industry is configured from a personnel perspective is way out of date. I mean, Hong Kong's F&B industry is the last 7, 8, 9 years has completely gone into a realm of its own. It's completely revolutionized the quality of the outlets, the quality of the food that's served, the experience that's offered, and all the rest of that good stuff. But unfortunately, it seems the immigration department are sort of locked into data that's probably 20 years out of date from how, for example, the Vocational Training Council once upon a time understood how the F&B industry was configured here.
So what do they actually let you do?
Well, they'll let you, as a chef, be able to secure immigration status as a chef to be in charge of the restaurant.
Right.
Anything less than that, almost impossible to get approved under the general employment policy. So it means that if you're, for example, offering a dining experience that is... say, for example, is a boulangerie type French dining experience, and part of your proposition is to have somebody at the front of house who is experienced in talking about French cheese and meats and what goes well with a wine and all this
which
kind of stuff.
Enough.
Yeah, which is all part of the dining experience. Ostensibly, whilst you can get a visa for the guy who's responsible for, you know, managing the operation at the back end, the head chef, anyone that's at front of house, you won't be able to get immigration status for. So those types of outlets are very limited. You don't see them a great deal because they can't get staff for them. They can't get visas for the staff, I should say.
It just makes you, I'm sure you've asked, like, who comes up with these answers? Who comes up with these, oh, you can't do that, you can do this? I mean, these are very, very high-end, specialized guys.
Yeah.
And if I was opening a patisserie or whatever,
yeah,
and I knew that my baker was currently living in Lyon, this guy,
yeah,
I want him here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I'd say, unfortunately, right now, the immigration department are not ascribing those types of qualities as far falling within the definition of being a professional for the purposes of general employment policy, so routinely they don't get approved.
That's very flawed.
Which is why Jason, myself, and the industry generally is sort of getting together and being organised to try and see if we can get an adjustment in policy.
So you're talking about lobbying, this, that, and the other. Now, they don't tend to take much notice of these things. I mean, prove me wrong, I'm happy to be.
Well, if you don't ask, you don't get, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. So, I mean, lots of restaurants come and go in Hong Kong, lots of specialised restaurants. I've known. So if somebody's basically a top-end guy,
yeah,
he's management.
Yeah.
Then you're cool.
Yep, you're going to get. He's going to be deemed a professional for the purposes of the general employment policy. That's right.
Have you found this to happen in any other industry?
No, I mean the F&B industry is a unique animal unto itself. It also has a pretty bad reputation amongst the operators in the industry. That's not the owners of the businesses. I mean the people that work in the industry. They tend to be a little bit sort of fly by night, and they like to sort of pursue their art in one restaurant, and perhaps they get bored of it quickly, and then decide to go somewhere else. So they do tend to sort of flip between positions, and as a result of that, the Immigration Department have been very reluctant to give them a great wide berth on how they can spend their time here. So they do actually manage the F&B industry very closely in terms of the permissions that are given to them.
So here's the thing, is this a fair example? I want to open a real top-end joint, and I want a totally professional, big-time maitre d'.
Yeah.
They'll say, no, it's just a waiter.
You might get away with that, but then again, there's an analysis of how many other sort of local positions are being created. Created in that project, and you know there's always an opportunity to make a story. But I don't have any direct evidence of this. But there's a story that's anecdotal now to the F&B industry about a large foreign F&B group that's got a fantastic dining concept.
Yeah.
That we're committed to open several outlets here. Haven't been able to really deal with the issue of immigration status right from the get-go. So they've closed a pilot operation and they're going to shift everything to Singapore because that's where they can get it done on the ground.
There are lots of instances of this kind of thing happening. They're just going, ugh, too much trouble.
It's time for a shake-up, and that's what Jason Black and I and the other colleagues that are involved in this initiative.
Well, good luck. I mean, you know, what it is saying is that the grassroots is brilliant. The restaurants are getting better. They're being really applied decision making about who they have to come here, and that's good scene for Hong Kong Inc. You'd think that all the tourism boys and the I don't know Ministry of whatever would say, what can we do to help you?
Well, hopefully this initiative will focus the various agencies that count in relation to the F&B industry in this town, and you know, maybe we can get a result. You know, look, this I think it was $20 billion in F&B receipts last year or something. You can ask Jason about that when you speak to him later this week.
Oh,
he knows a lot about it.
But,
yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely huge part of our economy, and the foreign dining concepts have, as I said, have grown and grown and grown, as anybody can test just by walking around.
All the big brand names that are here, the French guys, the chefs who run their own Robuchon, people like that, Spoon.
It's fantastic, but there's all this friction in the system that needs to be alleviated through an adjustment in policy, in our view.
So to put it very simply, is this another example of the government shooting itself in the foot?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, in actual fact, and things need to be changed.
All right, then, let's change topic here. I'm talking to Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa geezer. Any questions you may have, you know, you've just moved here, can your wife or husband get this, that and the other? Dead simple, Steve, but people think, oh, it's a bit too simple, he won't like that.
Well, every situation is different and every question is unique, so sometimes I get stumped, sometimes it just, you know, comes off without having to think too hard about it at all.
Bring it on. You can check out our Morning Brew Facebook page or morningbrew@rthk.hk. Okay, looking at your website, interesting thing here. You were interviewed, or students interviewed you. It says, do mainlanders typically enjoy the same kind of immigration experience as other foreign nationals do in Hong Kong? And it's interesting.
Yeah, five law students, studying for JD at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, asked to interview me as part of a project that they've got, writing a paper as to how immigration policy in Hong Kong has served Hong Kong's interests or otherwise down the last few decades. And as part of that exercise, they asked me about the impact of mainlanders and how perhaps mainlanders had adjusted or contributed to an adjustment in the social fabric of Hong Kong.
Steve, just be honest. Call it what it is.
But no. So the conclusion was that the numbers are not so great. That's not happening. And basically, what happens is that the immigration policies of Hong Kong in relation to mainland talents are really designed to pick up the creme de la creme, and that's what's happened in my experience.
Also, what I'm reading between the lines is here: are they being shown, bias, favour?
Yeah, in many ways they are. Just the mere existence of the programmes, in my view, mean that mainlanders are being favoured, I would say, in general terms, over foreign nationals. However, it's important to bear in mind that the way that the admission of mainland talents and professionals scheme differs from the general employment policy test for professionals is all pretty much the same. However, if you look at the quality migrant admission scheme, 77% of all approvals go to mainland Chinese. So without a shadow of a doubt, the quality migrant admission scheme is favouring mainland talent.
Yeah, and let's move on, shall we? an interesting thing here, we always talk about relationships, official and otherwise, and I think we touched on gay relationships, didn't we, last time?
Yeah, we seem to do that quite a bit. Yeah.
Grey area too.
Yeah.
But can my dependent child go on to become a Hong Kong permanent resident if I'm not married to his mother? That's the bit I'm interested in.
Yes, absolutely.
Not mine.
In that instance, as long as one of the parents is a permanent resident and the child has lived here continuously for not less than 7 years and been able to sponsor him as a dependent throughout all of that time,
right,
then at the point of having lived here for those 7 years, you can verify his eligibility for permanent identity card, and he will then, irrespective of the geographical location of the other parent, yeah, or their immigration status, will be able to become a permanent resident.
That sounds like a no-brainer when you explain it. My question here is, why does this fellow feel the need to write this? Is he hitting a wall of red tape and he just doesn't get his head
around it? Good question, actually. The problem is that the Immigration Department website, which is the fountain of all knowledge in relation to, or official knowledge in relation to Hong Kong immigration, is set up to inform you, but it's not set up to advise you. So, the Immigration Department talk in very general terms at all times, and the way that the Immigration Department give any kind of definitive opinion on a particular set of circumstances is to receive an application from an applicant and to assess all the circumstances and then tell you basically whether you work or whether you're in or not. So because of that, there is a dearth of information that allows people to have any kind of real sense of how their application is going to be received from the department, because it's all too general.
Yeah.
Which is, the role that our website serves. We try to sort of fill those gaps.
Every case has its own nuances and specialties, if
absolutely,
you like.
Absolutely, yeah.
Does it slightly short-circuit them when you send something with just, it's not quite the normal, it's not quite ABC?
Well, it's not so much short-circuit them, but it's like you have to tell a story, right? And the Immigration Department are going to look at the facts of your story, they're going to assess the evidence of what you have in support of that story, and then they're going to apply what they've got before them to the policy as is, and then they're going to give you a ruling. So yeah, I mean, some things are absolutely cookie-cutter, home free. When applications come across my desk, I can look at it, I can tell you in 30 seconds, this is going to get approved. It's absolutely not an issue. And I'm sure the Immigration Department, the immigration officers look at cases like that and they go, yeah, this is a shoo-in as well.
All right.
But other cases are just so riddled with alternate facts and unusual circumstances and little wrinkles to the situation that, you really got to, sort of unravel everything to try and put it all back together again.
We're nearly out of time here, 27 minutes past 12. One from me. We're always going on about living continuously, blah, 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 7 years, ideal. Do you have to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard and fast. 7 years continuous or in a residence.
No, I mean, well, if you don't want, if you live here for
ages. Oh, I see what you mean. No, absolutely not. No, I mean, you're not compelled to make any application to the Immigration Department. No. I mean, once you get to 7 years, you're eligible to make that application for permanent residency if you wish. However, if you have genuinely determined that you haven't taken Hong Kong as your only place of permanent residence, so you can't make the declaration on the form, but you don't want to keep having to deal with sponsorship and these kinds of issues to remain here.
It is one of the greatest pieces of kit.
The
permanent ID.
It's de facto citizenship without a travel document.
You get off a 22-hour flight and you go think and you're through.
It's incredibly valuable, and I can tell you every investment visa, every employment visa, every dependent visa applicant that comes into my office, they've all got one eye on that permanent identity card down the road 7 years from now. And you'd be amazed at the number of calls that I get from people that are 4, 5, 6 years into their status here, and the only thing they're concerned about is making decisions now that doesn't compromise their ability to qualify for the right of abode subsequently.
Did you see the papers, particularly in the UK, when they sort of moot, we're thinking about ID cards, you can't do this, they don't realise it could really help them.
Well, I mean, especially in a town like this with 7.2 million people, we need to have a way to understand who everybody is, right? So how else are you going to do it?
It got down to the sort of Big Brother is watching thing with them, they get all Orwellian about it.
And don't we have bigger concerns now with what's going on the SA and all the NSA and all the other international agencies that are monitoring what we say, speak about, and possibly think about very soon?
Certainly. Well, they too have visa problems, so Steve's your man, go and talk to them. Anyway, the thing about, we're just saying how easy the Hong Kong ID card is, but do you know of any other country where it's that easy? I mean, you know, you've been around Australia and stuff. Is it that easy anywhere else?
You mean to
once
qualify,
you get this, once you get this,
you mean to actually have it issued to you?
Yeah.
I've had two clients in the last week that have both complimented the Immigration Department on how it only took 20 minutes for the issuance of their identity cards from going into walking out with their temporary IDs. I mean, it's an incredibly efficient service. It's fantastic to behold.
That's not bad at all.
It isn't.
But, like, I don't know why people here, they've accepted it for so long to have an ID card. I don't know. Think of the States, think of the UK. If I have an ID card, you know, you'll know where I am all the time, you're monitoring me, this, that and the other. They really get up in arms about it.
Well, you know, I've always been a little bit suspect about that. These days, if you've got a mobile phone, right,
no kidding.
The agencies that have got the ability to access the information know where you are and they know who you're talking to, and more often than not, they probably know what you're talking about.
Lovely, Steve. Thanks for coming for a chat today. Your website once again?
HongKongVisaGeezer.com.
Nice one. We'll talk in 3 or 4 weeks, probably. Take care, Steve Barnes.